Hello, and thank you for listening to PolitiTalk with Lane Palmer. Today on the podcast, I will be interviewing my friend Reed. So Reed, why don't you go ahead, start us off, tell us a little bit about yourself, and also how you came to have the political mindset that you currently have.
Okay. Well, I'm a PhD student at Ohio State University. I do Italian studies. I predominantly focus on the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. I was born in Ohio, but I spent a lot of time in Florida throughout high school, and for my bachelor's degree, I was in Florida State University. So my current political views are the exact opposite of what my history and background would indicate. So my mother and my mother's side of the family, they're all Pentecostal Christians, which is a problematic a sect of Christianity that doesn't tend to be pro people that aren't Pentecostal Christians. The other side, my father's side, is Roman Catholic, and very conservative and politically sound. Not all of them. I've noticed, especially lately with the current political situation, a lot of people on my father's side of the family that I thought were more conservative are just not big critics of the current regime. So I'd say my background, being raised mostly on my mother's side, was complicated and difficult because you're in a small town and you can't really see other perspectives for the beginning part of your life. And you have to learn to question very weird things on your own, to the point that you end up questioning just about everything. And everything that you know, your reality breaks and becomes something entirely different, to the point of resistance to what you know to be inherently immoral or unethical. I don't know how to continue. Hold on. I voted for Bernie in the primary in 2016, and I would have voted Bernie for the primary this year, and that I didn't vote early, and then he dropped out before the Ohio primary. So, definitely my political stance is very left leaning, and I buy the whole social democracy shtick, and I highly support moving towards that in the most manageable way. And I am pro avoiding growing pains, so it's okay to take it slow, I think.
Yeah, so what was the point in your adolescence where you really were just like, hey, like, this isn't it? Like, what made it click for you?
A book by Edith Hamilton, a compilation, kind of brief version of Greek mythology. It was really, really easy to kind of figure out that gods die and don't exist anymore, and that you're part of that cycle. You're part of the group of people that in the future, 1,000 years or less, people are going to look back and go, can you believe what they believed? You look at these people, they thought Zeus threw lightning bolts from the sky. They're going to say, humankind is going to look back on this period the same way we look back on the Greeks. And that was really a moment. I asked a pastor. I said, explain this to me, because it just doesn't make any sense. And he couldn't. He had no answers. And it was alarming to me that the people that I thought had the answers didn't. Mm-hmm. And I was probably ninth grade, so 13. So 13 years old. And I said, okay. But it didn't just poof away, right? You have inherent guilt and indoctrination that you have to work your way out of before you can start to look at the world not from that lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like you have a very, very great world mindset where you take in a lot of information from other cultures and societies. How has that impacted your political leaning in the States at all?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I've lived on and off between here in Italy, and which isn't a political haven, right, by any means, but it is a cultural one, and it's the one where it's more condensed, and it can be, I can't be more controlled because it's out of control. Italian politics are out of control. Worse than us, I promise. But it's such a small place comparatively that you can navigate it in a much different way, in a personal way, with everyone that you see every day, versus here, where everything's just so big and so divided socially, economically, that it puts into perspective politics with size. But then you also have to look at, like, the European Union as a kind of general governing body for any European countries that are part of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's more complicated, but then you also have, you know, how easy was it for me to go to the doctor there? You know, and then you think, okay, well, if Italy, which is not your kind of ideal, it's not your political ideal, how can they manage certain things that we say are too expensive or impossible, right? Or you look at, if I wanted to go to school there, how much it would have cost me. I did study there through an American university. If I wanted to stay there and study in a Florentine university, how much would that have cost me a year? Practically nothing. Mm-hmm. So you start to think about those things. Why can they do it and we can't? And the answer is we can, but we don't want to. And people don't tend to understand what that entails. And we seem to have an unlimited military budget, but not money for education, higher education. And I think what that really showed me is we don't have a culture that values having a generally educated populace. It's better that we don't, to keep things the way they are, which isn't healthy, I'd say.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I haven't recorded an episode since literally, I think it was the day before that George Floyd was murdered.
Right.
So a lot has happened.
Right.
And you were somebody who just on social media was very vocal and active in participating in the different events, at least here in Ohio. Can you speak a little bit to kind of what that was like and your experience in that?
Yeah. It was interesting. I'd say I wasn't active on social media in that I was using it as a platform to find out what was going on. But I didn't voice anything on social media personally. But I was in downtown Columbus on the 30th of May, which would have been, if I recall correctly, either the second or that would have been, there would have already been two nights of riots in the evening downtown. It was pretty obvious to me. Okay, well, I needed to, we were only a few days into like national protests and that I had to be there. But I didn't know how. I've actually, until then, had never been to the State House. I'd never even been to that part of town. So I had to figure out where it was and how it was being organized. And one of my colleagues sent me I messaged them about it because they lived down there and said, you know, if things get dicey, they can come stay with me or whatnot. And they said, no, but we're actually going to a peaceful protest that was labeled a peaceful protest, peaceful march for George Floyd is what it was called, at the State House, intended to attract those of us who didn't want to be involved with any of the more violent things going on, which it turns out a lot of the time is a mix of both protesters that become violent and a large amount of people not involved with the movement taking advantage of a fragile situation or police aggravating the situation, which is what I witnessed firsthand. I can't speak for every city. I can't speak for every night and I can't speak for every situation. But when we went, the march started off very peacefully. Hundreds very quickly became thousands peacefully. We stuck to the sidewalk. And then the riot police came in. There was no riot. There was no fighting. There was no violence. The issue, I think, for them, I don't know. The issue for them was that there were too many people. and that people couldn't be contained within the sidewalks of the state house or the, we never actually went onto the yard, I don't know why, but, and started going across the street. This was on, Broad Street, that's the one, yeah, Broad Street. And then, they were starting to use their bicycles, not riot shields, they made a line with their bikes and they were pushing people onto the sidewalks just because they were spilling over. And that was aggravated. People were getting aggravated. There was people shouting at each other. And eventually the whole street was barricaded by riot police. And it was really aggressive and really odd. And I mean, if a protest picks up enough stamina that thousands of people are going to be crowding down there, you shut off the main street. You don't try to condemn protesters for spilling out onto the street. The street becomes the protesters, and traffic has to go around, take a different route. It's not like the infrastructure of downtown Columbus can't handle a couple left turns, right? So they wanted to use that as a reason to, I think, to kind of take action against what was going on there, of course, because it'd be absolutely silly to say that it's not personal for police too, right? They're not there to maintain peace, and they're not there to control a riot that isn't happening. They're there because these are protests against them, right? And which is the worst place to be, isn't it? If there's a protest against you as every individual, but as a collective body that's let the country down in every major city, in every city, not even, you know, then maybe you shouldn't be there, because we were fine without them and no one was getting hurt and there was no violence. And then I saw the first mace happen, but I couldn't quite make out what had happened. And it was a congresswoman, you know, and she was the first to catch it that day. It was Sunday morning at about 11 a.m. It was before lunch, so it's not like one of these crazy evening riots that you see in the news. It was just right in the middle of the day. And I later confirmed, because she reported her story, you know, what had happened. She was trying to mediate a conversation between a protester and one of the riot police. And according to her, he just got aggravated when things got heated and sprayed them both. So I thought that was really crazy. And it just went downhill from there. The protesters moved into the intersection. And so the riot police would have been closed in, right, on all sides. And they didn't like that, of course, because it's not really just a movement to make sure things don't get out of hand. It's almost like a military operation, and they have to secure an escape route, right? Because they didn't want to get closed in. So they started spraying and keeping people down and bashing them with the bikes and this whole number. And it was, I was downwind, so the wind was at my back. Not one officer dared spray in our direction. We were the only wall of people to not get sprayed, but we also knelt and we also tried to show that we weren't being violent. And then, I mean, I'm trying to remember, it was just the mace, and that went on, and then they dragged someone who probably got a little violent and deserved to kind of get taken out of there. I'll be honest, you can't be hitting people. And then the SWAT cars came in, which you almost roll your eyes, you know. You almost roll your eyes. And then they declared a state of emergency, you know, back door to be able to use whatever kind of force they want, right? They said we had to evacuate the premises. And then they brought in horses, and they brought in tear gas. And they were using the horses to push back a wall of people, charging them with horses. I thought that was just bizarre and kind of crazy and excessive and brutal. And then they threw the tear gas at someone, threw it back at the horses, and then the horses were scattering and they were jumping over. It was really crazy. The whole thing was really bizarre and entirely avoidable. And, you know, it's, especially the way these things get reported, you know, you can't say, when you see these things on the news and you say, okay, well, it's impossible to say what really happened. Who's the aggravator? Who's the aggravatee? That's not a word. Who's the aggravated? Who's the, you know, in that? But when you see it firsthand, it shocks you that, you know, that would have gone well. And, you know, you've got people, dozens of people lying around, can't see, coughing, can't, you know, no medical, there's no medical help there besides fellow protesters who come with anti-mace stuff. So that the city has no problem deploying excessive force against protesters, but they also don't provide any relief to their injuries, which is the duty, you know, of the city. To me, it was just bizarre. And then you see in other places, the cops are destroying their medical supplies and this sort of thing. And you're like, what is going on around here? It's almost hard to believe that it is, that when you witness it yourself, that it's police aggravated. But in this specific one case that I was there for, even though I went down several more times and protested and there was a lot less issue, it's really hard to believe that it's your own police force.
Yeah, so a lot of different groups have sort of put out what they would like to see in terms of either defunding the police, mm-hmm. or police reform, right. more training. Is there anything that you personally would like to see implemented with the police force?
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably the most immediate solution is that, I don't want to say that the depending on what state you're in, the 9 months to a year, I don't want to say that that's not intense training. And I don't want to say that police officers that go through that training didn't learn anything, or that they didn't become qualified in some area of law enforcement, but less than a year, it's not enough. It is just not enough. So my personal thought is you have to have a basic education. I mean, I think at least in some area of criminology, sociology, something that makes you more qualified than you went through the training course. 'Cause then what you have is people not mature enough and not educated enough to be enforcing our laws. And you see it all the time in all these videos of people recording police, you know, clearly violating their protocols, not knowing the laws, not turning on their body cams when they kill people, right? And what you end up having is not a couple of bad apples, but your entire law enforcement full of underqualified people. And that's why I think we have such a massive problem. So I don't want to say you need a bachelor's degree and then their training or whatever it is. I think the training needs completely reformed. I don't think 2 years, 2 years is enough to learn to become a police officer, to learn how to deal with people. You need mental health training, social science, actually know the law. I know that's a big shock, a big, you know, kind of request for our law enforcement. And, you know, what we see is police force. I was talking to a friend who is a police officer, who said, we just enforce the law. So take it up with the people who make the laws. Mm. I'm sorry, you're the ones enforcing it. So I think we also need to see, if we do have a well-rounded police force who does see the issue, then they need to take issue with it, right? They need to collectively, the same way if thousands, hundreds of thousands of people can mobilize and say there's something wrong with this, the police force can do it too. And try to fix it, I think. Mm-hmm. I completely support minor defunding efforts. I don't think police need to get called because the parent can't get their child under control, right? Police don't need to get called for mental health issues that are not dangerous, right? I think there are ways that we can do that. We already do it, right? We have a fire department. We have, you know, emergency medical departments, and yeah, they all get routed through the same 911. Why can't we do that with other groups of people more professionally trained to do things that police officers are not? And I feel pretty confident that they don't want to respond to those calls either, right? They've got real. There are more imperative things for them to attend to than a cat stuck in a tree, right?
Yeah, and I would agree with that too. I guess I want to try and go back to somewhat of a previous point that you had made before when talking about the federal government and almost this unlimited military budget that they that they find money for each and every year.
Right.
It seems to be increasing every year. With the defunding of the police efforts that have been in action, there are certain governors around the country that have proceeded to lower their police budget.
Mm-hmm.
But a majority of governors actually started to increase, one of the ones being the Washington, D.C. mayor, who actually had the street that led to the White House painted Black Lives Matter.
Right.
She actually raised the police budget by millions upon millions of dollars, taking funds away from education, Medicaid, right. Medicare, Social Security, all that kind of stuff, for the state unemployment benefits, what have you. So I guess what, in your mind, why is it that governors continuously keep adding funds to the military police,
right.
or to the police, almost as if, you know, the same way our federal government adds to the military budget?
Right. Oh, that's a really good question. I'd say right now, because they're not seeing exactly what happens. So I think right now police funding is going up in a lot of places to maintain police presence, given civil unrest is still an ongoing thing. So I think maybe I'd have to look into it more, but maybe the idea is, well, while we're still in this really delicate and fragile period and people are very upset, we need to have more law enforcement patrolling and this sort of thing, so increase the budget, which is the opposite of what should be happening, I think. Because when there's no, at least in my experience, I've probably been to between 6 and 10 protests, somewhere in there, and they always go exceptionally well when there's a minimum police presence. The minute there's police, things go wrong, and that's been consistent. So I think less. I think they should be reducing that, and not. But that's, I think, the logic maybe behind it. You need more law enforcement for this period. But other than that, I can't imagine why. Also, maybe because of COVID, maybe because of this kind of idea of hazard pay, maybe they're getting more money because they're essential workers, maybe they get hazard pay, I don't know, I'm sure that depends on the state. Maybe that's part of why you have to increase their budget in COVID times. So COVID, civil unrest, and a combination of those two, maybe. I'm just making that up, I think.
No. And I think there is a point to be made, but it always seems as though it comes at the cost of essentially defunding mental health, defunding mm-hmm. education, defunding all of these great social programs in the states. So why can't you have just as an effective police force, but also have these great social programs in place as well? Can that happen, or can it only be one or the other?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think it can happen, but I think the idea is we don't want police at the capacity that they are. Mm-hmm. I live by a quite simple idea of how police should be. Leave people alone unless someone's in danger. I am completely against highway patrol. Leave people alone. Leave people alone. If there's an accident, we need you. If someone's in danger, we need you. If someone's going 10 over, leave them alone, right? I think at least I learned that it depends on where you are. Not everyone has quotas, but some police force have speeding ticket quotas. Are you kidding me? You have to go out and find people breaking the law. That's kind of weird, isn't it? Just leave people alone. I don't think any money should be going into cops sitting there at those weird little sections between the highways waiting for people. Because we pay for that, you know. Every once in a while you see some, you know, jack zooming in between people. Okay, it's probably unfavorable. Leave them alone. Leave them alone. But that's just how I think that should be.
No, you raise an interesting point about quotas too, because I think once you introduce them, that's when the racial injustice comes into play. If we just reference back to stop and frisk in mm-hmm. New York City, the officers had to stop and mm-hmm. frisk people, a certain amount of people within a given time frame. And a majority of those people were Hispanic, mm-hmm. Black Americans. So why is it that when you think that when police officers have to do these things, right, they have to carry out their duty, they target those groups of people in particular.
Mm-hmm. I think, coming back to the conversation I had with my cop friend, he said something interesting, and I think I asked him, if my tail light's out, why am I getting pulled over? Why can't you roll down your window and say, hey, tail light's out, and move on? I understand there's protocol and safety and all these weird things. He told me that they will find reasons because they want to catch someone with a warrant out on them. They are using minor infractions of the law, hiding behind the, oh, it's the law, so we have to enforce it. It's our duty to try to catch people with warrants. And that's what they're doing. So when you get pulled over for something silly, they're hoping you're one of these people, you know, with a warrant for whatever reason. Now, when it comes to racial injustice and when it comes to prejudice, and maybe numbers. Maybe they have numbers. I don't know what they have. Maybe they know. They have a profile of what their precinct has in terms of warrants. And maybe they have that organized by race. I don't know. And that amounts to who they stop and why they stop them and what they're really hoping. They're not telling you. They're not hoping that you'll go get your taillight fixed. They're hoping they can take you in. That's what they want. And I thought that was pretty alarming. And maybe, maybe that how that has to do with race could boil down to prejudice, could boil down to where they are and what is the likelihood that there are, given the number of warrants that are out, how that's organized. I don't actually know. I don't know. But I think that has something to do with it. Or if a cop thinks that a black person is more likely to have a warrant, or a Mexican person, or someone of any variety of color besides white is more likely to have a warrant, they'll find a reason to stop them, anything they can, and they're not stopping them for that reason. They want to book them for something. Which, again, not that I support criminals, but I asked my friend, I said, okay, and now that you've stopped someone for something very benign, now that you've used your position to, in my view, harass someone because you wanted to find something else, and what if they don't have a warrant? Do you think that's a fair treatment of the people, that you only really have two duties, protect and serve? That's what you do. Do you think that's a fair treatment of those people, or do you think that's abuse of power? And he kind of stuttered and didn't really have a whole lot to say about it, you know, so.
So we are less than 100 days now from the election. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on where we're at? I mean, it's no secret if, you know, I have really, really dedicated listener who's listened to all of my podcasts, that I'm a huge Bernie supporter. I know you right. were too.
Yeah.
Did you anticipate this outcome? Did you kind of think that this was the way it was going to go?
I'm extremely disappointed by this outcome. It's almost funny. If it were not so sad. If it were not so sad. I mean, the way I see it, COVID ruined a lot of things. I think Bernie's income from his supporters, because that's how he funded his campaign, went with all their jobs. I think he would have won, and I think he would have beat Trump, and that's how I think that would have gone. But unfortunately, in this terrible moment, we're stuck with, again, the lesser of two evils. I don't think there's anything great about Joe Biden. I don't think there's anything compelling about Joe Biden. I don't think he's, I wouldn't vote for him in any other circumstance. And I think a lot of people know that too, and they see that too, and that's why I don't have any optimism for the outcome of this election. If Trump were to win again, it would be sour, but not unexpected. But no, I mean, I was pleased to see even Fox News at this point really, really going hard on Trump. They don't like him either. And I thought that was interesting. So maybe the tides are generally shifting, and now it's just the crazies that are going to vote for Trump, and hopefully we outnumber them. But, I mean, it doesn't matter. We saw, obviously, it doesn't matter if you actually outnumber them. You, because he didn't have the popular vote, did he? So, I don't know. I'm just going to vote and wait and try to remain neutral in my emotional and mental being as much as I can.
Yeah, I really was, I guess, expecting, not that I was hoping that Trump would botch the COVID response. I really was hoping that this would be the thing that he would get right.
Yeah.
But now that we've seen kind of the fruits of the Republican labor, still animosity towards wearing masks, reopening efforts with minimal social distancing in certain states like Florida and Texas, where the cases are just skyrocketing. Why doesn't this hurt him? Why doesn't this pandemic hurt Trump?
I've heard it time and time again when I go home to rural Ohio, where most people tend to support Donald Trump. I hear them talk about how excellently he reacted to COVID. That's what I hear them say, which is just false. It's just false. When it first went to Italy and really started to hit Italy hard, I was shocked that my professor, who lives in Italy, was able to go home for a funeral and fly back unchecked when half of Italy was locked down. And Trump has the audacity to say how quickly he responded. He didn't. Because if half of Italy is locked down and people are flying freely to and from Italy, you didn't react quickly. You didn't. So, I've heard them talk about how, he was so quick to stop Chinese people from coming here. By the time he did that, Italy was already shutting down. He wasn't quick. He was calling it Kung Flu. You know, China virus, acting like it was geographically locked and that it couldn't come here. He even said so, it won't come here. Now we're one of the worst in the world. So, yeah, he didn't react. And it's crap, anyone who says that he did. But they think he did. I've heard people talk about how outstandingly honest he is. It just shows they don't know what's going on. And they're foolish, to be honest, because he's the worst liar, I think, on the planet. If you can't tell when that guy's lying, I mean, you don't even need to fact check most of the time, then there's something wrong with you, I think. But, yeah.
It's interesting that the Republicans have decided to use the pandemic as a partisanship issue. Mm-hmm. To quote Meghan McCain from The View. She's one of the leading Republican voices on national TV. She's frustrated because at the start of the pandemic, the CDC did say that masks probably would not have an effect on the spread of COVID, wearing them or not wearing them. And since then, obviously, we now know the effects of how important it is to wear masks. That's essentially just down to the fact that in the scientific method, you have a hypothesis, you test it, there are variables, and you come to a conclusion. And that was the conclusion they came to. Their hypothesis was incorrect. However, when they said that masks weren't effective. But when, as Americans are seeing the scientific method in motion, and there is such a distrust now in the scientific method, is there really any way that we can convince people who are already skeptical that essentially, you know, what's being said isn't the end all be all, that, you know, this virus changes, right? Like, we don't know everything about it. And yet there are people who are thinking that we should already have it, you know, under control, and we should already know everything about it. What do you, how do you speak to somebody who has that in their mindset?
I feel like that's it, that the actual issue is different. I feel like the people that we have that you're talking about don't really care what the CDC said or says. What they care is that their rights are being infringed upon. You know, then these are the same people that think that it's that it was a virus made by the Democrats with the Chinese government to unseat Trump. These are the what I've heard a lot of people actually like declare as fact. I even saw a Facebook post with. It was, I think it was Barack Obama and Joe Biden in a lab next to a, a short white girl with black hair wearing, she was some kind of scientist. And the post said that it was them in Wuhan. It wasn't a Chinese girl. But... And someone shared that, thinking, here's evidence that, that the Democratic, you know, party is has went to Wuhan and created this virus so that we can have something to unseat Trump. There's something far worse going on here than people just not wanting to listen to general health standards. Now they're protesting because it's unconstitutional to say that you have to wear a mask, which it could be. Like I said in the very beginning, leave people alone. I don't want to dial back on that too much. I think there should be a mask mandate. I really do, especially in businesses. Who have the right to do that, and even more so, the workers should be protected. It's a whole different like horror story. What's happening there, and you know, a lot of them get COVID and die. Yeah, you know, you've seen these like plandemic parties where people go with someone who's tested positive and then someone dies and you go sorry, but like you know, I don't want to say like natural selection because that's horrible, because you know that these people have families and that sort of thing, but like, don't be an idiot.
Yeah. So let's finish on, I guess, a hopeful note, right? Okay. So I'm going to try and remain hopeful, but I anticipate how a Joe Biden presidency would look in the first 4 years.
Right.
Joe gets elected president. Mm-hmm. He gets in there. What would you want him to do? What would you want to see accomplished?
In 4 years?
In his first 4 years.
Let's
be super generous. Let's say the Democrats take back both the House and the Senate.
Okay.
He's got full reign. Full reign to do whatever he wants. What do you want to see?
I would absolutely like to see a large increase to the federal minimum wage. You know, what every state has to abide by, minimum wage for workers. I would like to see universal health care. We can do that in 4 years. I would actually think leaving private healthcare is an option, but I think as a citizen, you should be born in this country with healthcare. I think that is the standard in any, you know, I guess we call them industrialized, modern, you know, first world, whatever way you want to put it. That's a standard. I would like to see that. I would love to see universities start to restructure their finance system to find a way that public universities can be, and public university education can be more attainable. I would like to see the Pell Grant, which was cut by Trump, to be refunded properly. It still exists, but it was cut. I would love to see us withdraw from the Middle East. I think actually Trump pulled a lot of troops from Afghanistan, I think he did that. But I think our business there, we've done enough damage, and I don't know enough about Middle Eastern politics, but the amount of spending we put into war in the Middle East has gone on long enough, and we need to start finding a way to stop that and reallocate those funds to our healthcare system, our education system. I think that'd be a good start in 4 years. I think that's something we could do in 4 years. Even though I don't think he was originally on board with the universal healthcare system, Biden. He wasn't, but I think he said, like, sure. You know? And I think there's enough people that actually do want that it's something that we would see done. Let's see. I'm sure there's, like, big things that I missed. Mm-hmm. You put me on the spot.
No, but I think you're absolutely right. I think, if anything, the pandemic has shown how atrocious it is to have your healthcare tied to your job.
Oh, because terrible.
The minute you're furloughed, let go, because of things beyond your control, pandemic, and you get sick with that very same disease, you don't have any coverage for it now. It's kind of mind-boggling, yeah. Honestly. But, no, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and opinions today. I've really enjoyed getting to hear them. And, yeah, thank you again, Reed.
Thank you.